Welcome to the Teach the Geek podcast, where engineer and author Neil Thompson talks with STEM professionals about public speaking, a struggle for many of us. Whether you're a novice public speaker or a proficient one, you can always pick up tips on how to improve. Here's your host, Neil Thompson.
Welcome to another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. I work with technical professionals so they can present more effectively, especially in front of non-technical audiences. And you can learn more about that at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Today, my guest is Cynthia Smith. She is a consultant who develops coaching and training programs in businesses ranging from Fortune 50 companies to startups. So how did a geologist come to this line of work? Let's find out.
Oh,
welcome to Teach the Geek interview, Cynthia.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Wonderful.
Oh, golly. So the
first question I would have is, I mean, I did mention that you studied geology. So what was the motivation to study geology?
Well, as a little kid, I loved nature. And I was the kid that had a little red wagon and I would go around the neighborhood and pick up rocks. I also collected butterflies, just being in the outdoors, but especially rocks. And in high school, I built a polarizing microscope and grew crystals and did all that kind of thing. And I decided when I went to college at Indiana University to study geology, mainly because it was the toughest natural science degree. You had to take all these different classes and different scientists to get a degree in geology. So that's how I got started to it. It's just kind of a natural love.
All right. So now you get a degree in geology. It's time to go out into the workforce. What type of work did you do when you graduated?
Well, I it's a good question. So I was an undergraduate. And that if you were a graduate, they had on-campus recruitment. And I thought, you know what, I should start practicing now. So I went ahead and put my name on the list. And lo and behold, Exxon, I was the top recruiting choice for Exxon. And the graduate students were all pissed at me. They came and said, it's not fair, right? But I wanted a summer job, and the guy that I interviewed with encouraged me, just tick the box for permanent, you know, and if you don't like it, you can always quit. So I decided if I wasn't having fun, if I wasn't learning something new, and if I wasn't excited about the next phase, that I would quit. And I stayed with Exxon almost 20 years.
Wow, that's a long time to stay with one company. What kept you there?
Well, at first, what kept me there was just the learning curve. You know, Exxon had really great development programs. The people that I worked with were just fantastic. It's a very high-performing work culture. And then at some point, when I had a team of my own and we were doing major field remapping in actually Fort Bend County, there's a field called Thompson Field that used to be a crown jewel. It was discovered back in the 30s. So you have a lot of bypassed oil and gas and fields like that. So we were remapping. And what I noticed is that there was one day when we were all in a conference room and the energy was high. People were just digging into it. We were having fun. It was playful and the ideas were flowing. You know, we had our cross sections all up in the wall. And then the next day, the bodies turned up and the energy was flat. And that started to get me interested in what I call interaction dynamics. You know, how do you have high performance in a team sustainably? What does it take to have that type of innovation and creative idea flow? So that was really a turning point in my career. And my boss recognized it. So my next position was working for the chief production geologist. And that position had two offices. I was part of the production training group. So I got very thoroughly trained in managing training. I had training specialists working for me. We started to develop curriculum for production geoscientists. And then eventually the Exxon Exploration Company reached out and recruited me for a role there, where I had 1,000 geoscientists around the globe. And this, you know, my team was in charge of administration and career development, things like that. So I felt like I got to change things that I wouldn't say they were wrong, but I felt the company could have done a better job developing me in my career. And I implemented some changes to the way that geoscientists are developed at Exxon. And this was a long time ago, and I'm proud to say that a lot of those changes have expanded since then, and it's still there. So as a change maker, you know, being able to create sustainable change is just wonderful.
When it comes to managing others, what is something that you didn't anticipate?
Oh, golly. Well, it's interesting because in my career now, I coach and consult with leaders, some of them very high level, on that very topic. And one of the challenges in any leadership role, all the way from frontline or a foreman out in the field, if you're in construction, all the way up to a C-suite person, is when you're dealing with the people element, it's unpredictable, right? And certainly the kind of VUCA that we have in the world now, post-pandemic, with all the challenges facing humanity and the adaptive challenges where what used to work in the past doesn't work now or in the future. There's so much change in the world. So being able to not just think outside the box, but to not be trapped by your own experience. There's a famous coach that has a great saying. He says, you know, what got you here won't get you there. And it's even more true now. So there's, you know, it's that ability to lead when you actually don't know the answer, and having the skill to be able to distinguish that, you know what, this challenge here, this is a unicorn. I cannot apply a tried and true solution and just delegate it to somebody else to go get it done, right? We need to circle the wagons. We need to bring in some other type of thought leaders. And this can be very challenging in a technical professional setting, by the way. As you know, you have a background as an engineer, right? So,
that's right.
Yeah. So getting comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Indeed.
And kind of thinking into new territory. There's a completely different skill set and mindset that's required.
Yeah, I agree with you, Cynthia.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to even you managing others, is that something that you always wanted to do, or is it something that kind of fell into your lap?
Oh, you know, I think being a, you know, graduating from college and going to work for a big company, you aspire to progress. And I think there's kind of a trap of success. Like people want to move ahead and get into different positions. And some of them really aren't suited for that. And what I made a lot of mistakes along the way. But I think what I did not have back then was someone who was a good mentor. I mean, I had mentors, but they were all male back then. There weren't a lot of women in the profession. And certainly a number of the women who'd been there, like there was one in particular who actually was not in my company. She was part of the Houston Geological Society, but she's been in the business for quite some time. And she had what's called the Queen Bee Syndrome, So she would not lift other women. She would not mentor other women because being a woman in a man's profession, which is largely male dominated, there was a sense of being special. And that, I don't find that much now because large companies do have mentoring programs, but back then that was not available. And so the challenge with being a woman leader in a male-dominated profession is that you tend to put on a gorilla suit because you're modeling leadership behaviors that you see that work around you, which are largely male. And a woman in a gorilla suit doesn't come across very well at all. So learning how to harness some of it, I call it authentic leadership. It's kind of my own brand of authentic leadership, but really digging into who you are and who you aspire to be as a leader, to not hold back, but to be able to regulate appropriately and make a difference in a culture that it, you might be in a position where it's hard to be heard. And in science in particular, there are so many times where women, you look at who won the Nobel Prize and they're in the background. Or most recently with the RNA the with COVID, women are not necessarily heard. But when, if you study science, the philosophy of science, this happens again and again and again. So, like Semmelweis and Wegener, whatnot, all these famous stories where someone comes up with a what's later found to be a brilliant idea, and they're unable to get it across while they're alive. That's how Steve Jobs got the GUI interface from Xerox PARC, right? Because he saw the value of it, but inside that ecology of Xerox, it just that brilliant innovation was not a fit for their particular culture. So there are many challenges to a brilliant mind having a great technical innovation or solution and trying to get attention for your idea, which is, what you do. What you do is you encourage that people to be able to present their ideas in a way that they're heard.
Do you think that leaders should have their own leadership style, or should they lead based on how people want to be led?
Well, that's a fantastic question. And what I've found is that part of the like in the background of that question is if someone locks into this is my way or the highway, it's not going to work. I have met the most caring, brilliant leaders that have a sense of justice. And so they strive to treat everybody the same way. And guess what? When I interview their team members, some of the people love it, some of the people could care less, and some of the people hate it. So it goes back to that platinum rule. You need to actually get to know a person as a person, not a pair of hands. But form a relationship, a very solid relationship, one to where there's a sense of trust. And you do that individually, and then you do that collectively as a team. And that's how you start to grow, or you have the nutrients there to start to have psychological safety, which Amy Edmondson has put on the map as one of the key indicators. If a team have psychological safety, you can kick around your half-baked ideas and you spend less time researching something on your own, so you're able to get feedback into your work product that, maybe your idea isn't that good and, you're there testing it to see if it's good, but you need to open up other eyes and opinions a little earlier in the development process. And you see this, that's where the agile work sprints have come from, where the team gathers at the end of every week and does a complete tear down and lessons learned rather than the traditional waterfall project management where you plan something out and then, it gets executed and there's little check-ins. But anyway, I hope that answered your question.
Even if it didn't, I wouldn't say so. That'd be kind of awkward.
Okay.
I had no clue what you're talking about, Cynthia.
Oh, you've lived all this. I know. I think we
So,
all have.
what motivated you to start your own consultancy?
Well, I was one of those people at Exxon. I thought I would be there for life, big company, whatnot. And after I fixed everything that I thought was wrong with the career development system, and I overhauled the curriculum and did a lot of, really kind of made my mark. And this was a multi-year process and working very collaboratively with my boss and the other strategic leaders at Exxon Exploration Company and going to the board and, getting a 2-year program for new hires approved with its own budget, things like that. So I looked around for something else to sink my teeth into and I just couldn't find it. So there's something about me that I had learned, which is, I want to make a difference. I like making lasting impact. Number one. Number two, well, number one actually is I have this appetite for learning. If I'm not learning and growing, I will start getting myself into trouble. So in different ways. So that appetite for learning is very high. I couldn't find something to grab and start to forward the action in. And then in my personal life, I was one of those people that instead of taking, vacations and laying on a beach and sipping margaritas or whatever, I would do ropes courses and meditation retreat. It was the learning thing, learning adventures. And along the way, I met someone that said, "You know what? You are a natural born coach. You should start coaching professionally." And so I was doing some development with him. And then finally he said, "All right, you're ready. Get out there, get a client, start getting paid." So I started coaching professionally in 1995, before the International Coach Federation was even formed. And I was still at Exxon, so I launched this passion business, this side business. And finally, one day I looked in the mirror and I made myself a promise. I need to actually leave the company because I don't really see that future there. Sure, I could stay there and it felt like I'd be pushing paper around, but my interest loop kind of was elsewhere. And so I decided that year I would quit and venture out on my own. And this was quitting a job that I actually loved, where I was very highly regarded. But on December 31st, I walked in there, gave my boss my walking papers, and sat down and started crying because, I just needed to go. I just needed to go. I felt this inner calling to something else. Now, from a rational standpoint, maybe if I were an engineer, I would have, done a risk analysis and all that. But it was more like being guided internally. There was something there that was used up, and I couldn't get it inside that organization. I outgrew that large multinational company essentially.
All right. So
Yeah.
now you have your own consultancy. And what types of clients do you work with, and what kind of outcomes do they get from working with you?
Well, I kind of wear two hats. So part of my consultancy, I do independent contracting. And there is a company I have a very deep association with. And so I have one, it is a global consultancy. And I have associated with them since 2008. They have sent me around the world Before the pandemic, I had an assignment in Kazakhstan, and I was one of the leaders of a team. There were 11 of us who we were in charge of developing, transforming, and growing a safety culture for the world's largest giga project. It was called the Future Growth Project. And at peak, there were 17,000 people there. So this was a very leveraged model where we had train the trainer programs. I did executive coaching with the site execution managers and other senior leaders that had billion-dollar budgets each year. I mean, this was a, I think 40, well, I don't want to quite, it's multi, like under $50 billion, but it was a like 5 to 6 year project. And of course, you know, things slowed down during COVID, but I was there for 19 months and rolled off the project just before COVID. So that's an example of one of the things that I do is transforming large scale cultures. You know, in terms of what that looks like, it's a lot of coaching. It's a lot of facilitating leadership teams. It's a lot of getting up and training people at all levels in an organization. And then with my private clients, from time to time, I do some consulting gigs. Most often, it's a leadership coaching. A lot of it is one-on-one. I've done some online groups. Right now, I don't have a group running. I'm just looking for one-on-one clients, and I have room for two. So, but I enjoy working with people that are in positions of leadership that have those leadership challenges, whether it's an entrepreneur or a senior level executive who has kind of climbed the ladder and they feel trapped, like I did at some point. It was like, you know what, this isn't it. Or people who are reaching the end of their career life and they're getting ready to pivot into what's next. So it just depends on the person, but they need to have a sense of they love to learn. They want to make a difference. They are playing full out, and they're either not getting the results that they want or the cost is way too high. And that cost translates typically into they are so consumed by their work, and it may be because it's passionate, right? They love what they're doing, but then other areas of life fall by the wayside.
Nice. Okay. Understood. I suspect that communicating is a big part of the work that you do. And if I'm right in that, is that something you've always been good at? And if not, what did you do to get better at it?
Gosh, well, lots and lots of training. And then lots and lots of coaching. And I've had formal training and a lot of different communication protocols. I've developed some of my own. But I would say, you know, communication, I think there's an overfocus on how words come out of your mouth. And there are some parts that are neglected. First of all, the mental filters that you have about a particular situation or a person. If you don't think well of someone, you will be communicating that no matter what your words say. I have coached leaders where they've had a problem person, right? And the whole team, you know, that this person has gotten a label. And so what happens is people just write you off. And then usually that person is trying to be heard, so they're speaking louder and people just tune them out more. And it's gone on for years. So I've had some remarkable turnarounds where I work with that leader to listen to that person differently. to shift the way that they're listening and being with that person. And what happens is there's deeper communication in much less time. That person, you know, as a leader, to be able to give another person the experience of having been heard, a lot of people don't get that. And that's, you know, that plays into psychological safety and innovation right there. So working on how you're listening to people is critical. And then the other thing is developing what I call radical observation skills, where you're really putting your attention on the other person and you're watching for those micro expressions. And that gives you feedback on if you've thrown the ball in a way that they caught it. So it takes a lot of things beyond just the behavioral what comes out of your mouth skill when it comes to really good communication.
Indeed. This has been a great conversation, Cynthia. Thank you so much for being a guest. How can people get in touch with you?
Oh, I am so easy to find on LinkedIn. So it's Cynthia Smith, but it's Cynthia with an S, like in Sam. There's not very many of us out there. And my company is the Mitra Group, but LinkedIn is the best, easiest place to find me. I live in Austin, Texas. And I look forward to send me a DM. Love to connect.
Great. Well, everyone, that marks the end of another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. I work with technical professionals so they can present more effectively, especially in front of non-technical audiences. And you can learn more about that at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Until next time, take care and stay safe. Thanks, Cynthia.
Thank you.
Well, everyone, that marks another episode in the can. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like these episodes and want to support Teach the Geek, please subscribe, share, and like on any of your favorite podcast platforms, or on all of them. Also, if you prefer to watch the episodes, head on over to the YouTube channel at youtube.teachthegeek.com. Until next time.